All right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again talking some more Survivor 41. Dominic, episode 8, a thrilling night as far as I was concerned. Were you a big fan of this episode?
Not at first, because I started watching the episode late, and then also had to find a working feed, because as a Canadian pleb, I don't have the luck, or British pleb, whatever liminal space I exist in there. I don't get the luxury of just watching it live on my TV like you all do. So had to sort all of that out, and then my cat was distracting me. There was a lot going on, and so didn't really get to drink in the episode fully on a first viewing, but actually did like it quite a bit on a second viewing, and I think weirdly, a lot of the criticisms that people level at New School Survivor and just this season in particular were not really present in this episode. This was almost a return to form, but not in a way that a lot of people watching were able to appreciate based on a lot of the discussion I was seeing.
So, first of all, and a yes or no answer is just fine here, they don't air Survivor in Canada at the regular time?
Not that I know of, but also I don't have like I'm one of those millennials who I don't brag about not having a TV set, but I can't watch live TV basically. So I'm on my laptop trying to find some possibly illegal feed like everyone else.
Wow. All right. Well, remind me at the end of this podcast to notify the local authorities of your blatant disregard for the law. But I was a big fan of it precisely because I thought the result was fairly surprising compared to most of the other episodes. So while I certainly did enjoy rewatching it to prepare notes for this very podcast, I don't know that I necessarily would have come away so high on this specific week if I had already known how it was ultimately going to play out. But a lot to be getting into here either way, Dom. One quick thing before we do that, though, is in case anyone missed it, we did a special one-off podcast this week to commemorate the, if you can believe it, 10-year anniversary of our very first podcast, which back in 2011 was a breakdown of the merge on Survivor South Pacific. So we went and rewatched that episode and covered it all again and talked through that whole debacle through a more modern kind of lens. That was a lot of fun. So, Dom, let us now, I suppose, embark upon year 11. Drop the one, keep the other one. Don't drop anything. Let's just keep doing whatever we're doing. Dom, let's dive in to episode 8 here. Quite a bit in the way of fallout from the previous vote after everything that went down with the knowledge's power advantage and trying to play around that. Xander and Evie, I think, are both like individually happy about and proud of the way that that shell game worked out at the previous vote, but there's also a lot of tension now mounting among this former Yasa group, and this is one of the bigger surprises of the entire season to me. I was really, after the pre-merge, thinking that, yeah, it looks like the former Yasa tribe aren't in the best spot within the game, but it, at the very least, with Liana being an obvious exception here, it seems like they at least feel good about each other. They just pulled off this kind of successful idol misdirection, but over the course of that tribal council, a lot of information came to light about things that they had been keeping from each other and from other people within this big merge tribe. And Evie in particular got a bit of focus here early on, talking about how today is going to really be a relationship recovery tour, which I don't think Evie or any of the others even necessarily anticipated, but a lot going on here with the Yasa tribe now pretty clearly being on the outs, and we'll see that continue this week as Tiffany, spoiler alert, for anyone who hasn't seen the episode, is going to be our elimination here. But right off the bat, I'm already kind of like heartbroken for the little Yasa turtles that could.
Right?
Yeah, I was so sad. I thought that was some great symbolism that was setting us up for like the big Yasa turnaround, but it really seems like this is not going too well.
It's so sad. They were meant to be completing that miraculous ascent towards the beach, and instead they're just on their backs in the sand, flailing around with no hope of recovery, it seems. And that's truly tragic. But what made that group so compelling to watch in the pre-merge portion was it always seemed like everything was up in the air. And so when we got down to that group of four people, you couldn't really predict with certainty what kind of footing any pair of them would be on in a few weeks' time. And that's what made it so fun to watch. So Evie and Liana, I thought they were going to be maybe the power couple of the game at a certain point. And then Liana turning on Evie was like the big thing that set in motion everything that happened at the merge episode. And then Tiffany was like wheeling and dealing left and right and selling out each of the Yasa members to each other and then also to other people, but then ended up almost being the most loyal Yasa member just to the group as a whole by the end. And then Xander was always this wild card. So that made it so fun to follow them in the pre-merge, but also made it likely that eventually when those relationships were really tested externally for the first time, that it would all crumble. And that, it seems like that is what's happening here. Although that dynamism is back because it seems like Xander is actually doing his best to work his way up into the power structure and is somehow on better terms with Diana after everything that happened last week than Evie was now. So yeah, lots to follow there. And if you miss an episode of the season and then you come back, it's almost confusing what state the Yasas are in because it's so disconnected from how they were just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I want to first say I was really impressed with Evie maintaining their composure after all of this has gone on and giving those confessionals, presumably like the morning after or shortly thereafter, about the previous vote. And obviously this is, while surviving the vote is good, one of the worst timelines for the way all of this has probably played out from the post-merge forward. But it does still seem to me like Evie is maintaining a very solid head upon shoulders throughout all of this and staying as positive as possible about the situation going forward. And that is something that is always going to really impress me, is this is a game that is really mentally and physically taxing. And a little later on in this podcast, whenever we get to Papaya Gate, for lack of a better term, a thought that crossed my mind that I will get into in more detail later is, what would Ceri do? I feel like is generally like a pretty good baseline for how I would like to see someone reacting to things going on around them in Survivor. And I got a lot of very positive vibes from specifically Evie along those lines. So feeling very good about that, and obviously hoping at this point to see either of Evie or Xander make a deep run. But how likely do you think it is now, Dom? We lost Tiffany this week, and despite what it may have seemed like pre-merge or early on at the merge, it really does seem like the former Yasa people, and we're now down to only two of them, are at least in the short term going to continue to kind of be under the gun here. But do you feel like there are timelines where if even just one of them can survive another vote, win another timely necklace or whatever, there are enough cracks within the big group alliance that either or hopefully both of Xander or Evie can continue making a deep run here?
I think temporarily, but maybe not beyond that. And firstly, that's because the two of them don't really have that rock solid bond where normally that is the one thing which is a benefit of being in that kind of minority group, is the two of you are as solid as any pair can be in the game, and you're relying on the weaker bonds that everyone else has fraying under some kind of pressure and allowing you to sneak through. It seems like here, whatever like weird big sister, little brother dynamic the two of them have, as you say, last week was was a live tribal, not in the sense of you had things actually changing and plans being made there, although there definitely was some amount of that, but also that the status of certain relationships was changing at that tribal as new information came to light. And so Xander, who was like going out on a limb for his plucky little yassas, was learning that actually they never really valued him in the first place, and that Ebby was spilling the beans about his advantages and so on to their target in that tribal, you know, weeks beforehand. So I don't think that Ebby and Xander are going to be, you know, the two of them against the world or anything. And then also, I don't think that either of them can go undetected for very long, because usually what happens is you have this big alliance and then the smaller alliance, and then the head of the smaller alliance gets lopped off. And then even though the remainder of that is still somewhat threatening in their own right, and by all rights should be a target before too long, because the other players just aren't used to viewing them as threats yet, they're able to kind of glide under the radar for a little bit. There is no chance, I think, of either Ebby or Xander gliding under the radar anytime soon. I think that ship has well and truly sailed. And so even if there is some kind of cannibalization within the big alliance, and maybe the infighting with Shan or Ricard or Deshaun actually reaches the breaking point, maybe that gives them a stay of execution for a few weeks. But then once some new tighter group within that coalesces, they will be squarely back in the spotlight again.
Yeah, I don't know that there's much they can do themselves to diminish the long-term target that I would guess is pretty firmly cemented in most of the other players' minds at this point. Although it certainly doesn't seem like things are going super smoothly as things stand right now. And again, heavily edited TV show, that may not be the case in the slightest, but if there are deep enough kind of fractures that do develop within the bigger group, I think it's very possible that either, or hopefully both, of Xander and Ebby are able to just be viewed as valuable enough to keep around, or potentially good meat shields to keep around by someone within the big alliance, like getting greedy, and maybe that can buy them a little bit of time there. But yeah, hard to imagine either of those two at this point spending much time under the radar going forward here. But the Liana of it all is really interesting to me, and you flagged this up already, of her, it seems like, at least being totally open to, with respect to specifically Xander, trying to mend that fence, which is wild at this point, given the whole history between those two there. But I actually
And we don't actually know what the extent of that history is, because that was the missing piece of everything that happened last time, is just why it just is Liana so fixated on Xander. And it seemed to be a one-way street where sometimes two people get off to a bad start, and then one of them tries to take a shot at the other, or it becomes very clear that they distrust the other person, and then they kind of escalate in turn, and it goes back and forth, and it just can't really get repaired from that point. It seemed like here it really was just, for whatever reason, you know, legitimate or perceived or whatever, Liana just, her and Xander were like oil and water. It was never going to mix. And yet that's just like, just kidding now, but we're fine. we can rebuild that. I don't know.
I like that impulse, by the way, of setting aside our whole history. I am at least open to the possibility of working with Xander again in the future. I think.
I like that too. It just makes last week even more head scratching in that sense. It's like, well, why did we have to go to all of this trouble to get there? But I also do agree with what you said about Ebby seeming somewhat unflappable in the face of all of this adversity. And maybe it's just their demeanor, where even if they're just tilting off inside, or this raging ball of anxiety, they still would be just coming across in a way which is reassuring to others, if not to themselves internally. But yeah, even last week, when, you know, you're staring death in the face, you your allies haven't used the idol on you, you see votes piling up for you as Jeff reads them out, at that point you could be walking out of tribal council, out of the game, in literally seconds, and there's no kind of benefit to concealing your emotions there. And even then, Ebby was visibly kind of worried and frustrated, but even then was relatively calm, I think, given the situation. And then outside of that, despite being in the spotlight basically at all times, seems to be putting kind of a brave face on things. So I think if anyone can ride the wave in terms of however crazy the game continues to be, I think Evie's got a good shot of doing that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And to actually skip ahead a little bit to the papaya drama of it all, this kind of sparked this idea in my mind that once I had it, Evie was the real standout as far as being someone that I felt great about along these lines, where we end up seeing, after the reward challenge, Ricard comes in and takes a little slice of papaya from the people who did not end up getting to eat grilled cheese that day. And I would say both Ricard and Shan handled this pretty suboptimally. And it's certainly understandable why Shan would be very frustrated with Ricard in that moment. Saw plenty of tweets on Wednesday night from former Survivor players across every era of Survivor saying that, like, people who go and eat a reward meal would be acting in very bad form to eat any of the camp food that day. And it was, like, explicitly a no-no on whatever season that person was from.
And also that on their season they had it even worse.
Oh yeah, you know,
they would have traveled 4 miles uphill for just a tiny piece of papaya, and yet these people just have it handed to them, and look where the show has got to in this day and age.
Exactly, yes. And we'll absolutely grant that Shan in particular is someone who is probably going to be more triggered by this than the average person, having lost, I think, pretty close to, if not literally, every reward challenge to this point. Didn't get to eat anything at the merge. It seems like the starvation element is absolutely playing a big role for Shan, and that's totally understandable at this hour in the game. But my just overwhelming takeaway from both the Ricard perspective and Shan perspective is, what are either of you doing here? And I get that Ricard didn't think it was that big of a deal. He'd never had papaya before, apparently, and wanted to try some papaya. And turns out, by the way, saw this on Twitter as well, Ricard ended up being allergic to papaya. So got his own kind of karmic retribution there. But this scene, even for me, as someone who in general has seen a lot of things to like about both Shan and Ricard as Survivor players in the grand scheme of things, for whatever reason, brought to mind a quote from Dwight Schrute on some episode of The Office that I'm not going to be getting verbatim here, but we'll paraphrase. Dwight somewhere along the way says, "Before I do anything, I ask myself, is this something that an idiot would do? And if the answer is yes, I do not do that thing." I think a case can be made that Ricard took the idiot line in eating the papaya, and Shan, while totally understandable in the moment, took kind of the idiot line in really letting Ricard have it after he'd already eaten the piece of papaya. And clearly, it's not like he was trying to join in on the full meal. He just wanted to try one piece. And I feel like in Survivor, kind of an opposite sort of hypothesis about how people should be making their decisions within the game that I would feel good about in general is people just asking themselves, is this something Ceree Fields would do? And if it is, then that's the thing I'm going to do. And I feel like in this instance, neither of them were really practicing the what would Ceree do method here, but to go back to the place that we began this discussion and kind of tie this together with what I set up earlier, Evie really has stood out to me as someone who is handling many, if not most, things the way that I feel like Ceree would be handling adverse situations on Survivor.
Yeah, we've seen Evie go from the top to the bottom and have to navigate both of those with what each of those situations require, and I think handled that position of power pretty well, although I guess Liana and Tiffany and Xander all by the end had their reason to doubt Evie, so maybe that was always going to be a somewhat impossible task. And now that has completely flipped and she's having to work her way up from the bottom. Seems like that is also going to be a tough ask, but at least making a decent effort of it too. As for what would Ceree do, I think Ceree would not go off on people for eating the papaya. I don't know if she would, or rather, I don't think she would eat the papaya herself, but I'm not so sure that she wouldn't, go off on someone for eating the papaya. I remember Ceree having, getting in some fights with, like, the Penners of the world in seasons past, and her having some of those human reactions at times is part of what makes her such a fun character to watch, as opposed to, like, the Kim's Spratling of the world, right, where it's like, you are a cyborg sent from some agency to play Survivor, and the idea of you ever seeming frustrated with another human being is just so impossible to fathom that, maybe that's the model that we should not aspire to, but, that's the benchmark that we judge people against. But to me, this is what makes this episode and Ricardo and Shan individually and as a pair so captivating, is that they are messy, right? And they are hangry, I guess, in this case, and they're willing to have this back and forth with each other. And this is the first time in, I guess this is the first season of Survivor, Colin, here in year zero. So of course it's the first time, but this is the first time that we're seeing actual camp life drama of sorts in a very long time, where maybe this is validation in a way of the producers wanting to make them so deprived of food that just the possibility of acquiring food and that tension over who gets what actually is a real plot point in the show now.
I thought it was very noteworthy that when Nasir's name is getting floated somewhere around like the 25-minute mark or so as one of the people potentially worth voting out this week, Shan seems to sincerely be making the case that, like, I don't want Nasir to leave because Nasir is providing for the tribe. And I honestly don't even remember the last time that we heard someone advocate for anyone to stay or even, like, factor that sort of thing into their decision-making process.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, how much of that is for show versus what she's really thinking, who knows? But Shan is hangry, and that is, like, how rare is it that we see someone not just visibly be affected by that, but also kind of admit that that is seriously part of their decision making?
And I don't generally love the deprivation and, like, producers going out of their way to make it as hard as possible, and I think it would, frankly, be kind of a shame if Shan, just by virtue of constantly being on the losing team, ends up playing a significantly potentially worse game than she otherwise could have. And that has been one of my, like, go-to counterpoints in my many, many years at this point, advocating for making the show easier on the contestants as far as, like, food and clothes, etc., is concerned. But absolutely, in this one very fringe case, this is providing a very solid amount of TV drama.
And worth noting too that we see when that directly translates into a useful plot point of I'm really hangry and I'm going to let you know it, whereas we don't necessarily see the visible consequences of, well, I could be playing the game harder, I could be providing some useful TV content, but I just don't have the energy because I haven't eaten not just a square meal, but any meal in the past 2 weeks. I just literally don't have the energy to do that.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So let's actually now flash back, Dom, to this reward challenge that kind of spawned this whole dynamic where Ricard has already eaten and still wants to have some papaya. First of all, we show up to the reward challenge beach, and Jeff is talking to us directly to the camera as he is hiding this advantage underneath the sit-out bench. And ultimately, we're going to see nothing come of that. We're going to see Xander looking around for this sort of thing, but not even end up finding it. And I definitely want to say, I love that they ended up showing us that this was there, even though it didn't amount to anything. It from the perspective of, like, I don't want it to be the case that every time we see Jeff include some sort of advantage and that makes the air, it's because 100% of the time that means whoever it is about to find it. And we'll grant that, like, maybe it turns out down the line, whatever this advantage was, and we'll see it come into play later after someone else finds it elsewhere, would have been like the ultimate bailout for specifically Xander, and that's why it's being included. And if literally nothing had come of it ever in the game, they probably would have left it on the cutting room floor. But at least in the short term, really like that decision. And the other decision that I think is worth diving into here now, Dom, is at this reward challenge, for whatever reason, and this is not a tangent I need to go on right now, I hate that pretty much every reward challenge, it seems like, even post-merge, continues to be a team challenge instead of an individual challenge. It was one of the higher points of some of the weaker seasons, as far as I'm concerned. One of the few things that kind of added drama to the Nicaraguas of the world. Sorry, Matt Gagan, for talking about Nicaragua as one of the weaker seasons, but, like, one of the best elements of the game in the individual phase is someone winning a reward and that being good for them, but then they have to pick people to join them and essentially pick people to not join them, and that adds a ton to a lot of seasons in years gone by that is, it seems, been just kind of completely left for dead at this point, and would love to see that come back. But one way or another, we are going to be reaching into another bag of rocks here to draw our teams for this reward challenge. Once again, Erica is going to draw the bad rock here and have no chance at winning the reward. But Xander is going to say, Erica has spent enough time with the bad rock. I want to smash the hourglass, Jeff, and undo that, and I will take the spot on the sit-out bench. Seemingly altruistically, but obviously done with some different sorts of motivations, and I'm not entirely confident that those motivations were lost on the rest of the people involved in all of this. So what did you think of that from Xander?
Yeah, definitely some echoes of Sandman Del Sur, or Xander Del Sur, as some people are trying to make happen, where initially, you know, when this took place for the first time, it was, okay, well, this is novel, and I wonder how people are going to react. And once you got to the fourth time, the people were, like, trading spots on victorious reward challenge teams back and forth and so on, it was like, well, okay, I'm not enjoying this. I'm not sure if they're meant to be enjoying this themselves either. And yeah, I think the motivations here are so transparent, although I think there was something about Xander not even being able to partake in the reward anyway, and so maybe you could spin something different out of that. But in that case, it's more of I'm not doing this out of the goodness of my heart. It's, well, I can't eat this, and so it may as well go to someone who can.
Is Xander, like, allergic to grilled cheese or something?
I don't know if it's an allergy thing or, like, an ideological statement or whatever it is, but either way, don't think he will be partaking in grilled cheese there.
Are you a grilled cheese fan, Dom? Do they have grilled cheese in England?
English people do have grilled cheese. I am not one of them. But grilled cheese, it seems to be, like, the kind of Bitcoin of food, in the sense that you either don't have grilled cheese, or you love grilled cheese, and everyone else is going to know about it, and it is your entire personality that you love grilled cheese, and there's really no happy medium in between.
Wow. I had no idea where you were going with that when you first set it up, but I'll take it. Dom, yeah, I thought that Xander, when I first saw him do it, my initial reaction was, okay, this is interesting, and I don't hate this decision on his end, because he is essentially ensuring that whichever way the challenge goes, he is going to be with the majority of people. And that, I think, by itself is a pretty compelling point in favor of sitting out of this challenge and just guaranteeing that when there's going to be a group of six and there's going to be a group of five, you are in the group of six. However, it really did seem like as soon as he did it, a lot of people were very skeptical about his true motivations for doing so, and I would say correctly so. And then furthermore, what did you think about his rationale of, I want to be with the people who lost rather than the people who won? Because I feel like historically, it is often the people who are winning the rewards who are much more capable of making new deals together.
Yeah, this is a really interesting discussion, I think. And I know Stephen on Know-It-Alls was making the point that whenever you see an actual change in the game come out of a reward challenge, it seems to be more often from the winning team riding that high off on some amazing reward somewhere. That is much more kind of fertile ground for that kind of change to happen versus these demoralized losers back at camp who are just kind of biding time until everyone else gets back. But it used to be this guaranteed plot point in every single post-merge episode of the winning team would go on a reward, and the one person from the minority who snuck into that winning team through luck of the draw would bring down the spirits of everyone else, dragging them back into the game by going through the motions and saying, oh, well, the four of us here, we enjoy each other's company. We could lock in this final four right now. And that would so rarely amount to anything that eventually you just started to get sick of it being shown. So I don't know in reality how likely it is that, had Xander made an effort to be with the winners instead, that would have helped his chances at all. Versus if you are with the losers, and I feel like we don't see that pitch as often, but I don't know if that's because this also is happening every time and it just works even less often and so you just never get to see it, or if it's tried so much less often and that's why you never see it. But I get the impulse of, I want to be with the people who either should feel like they are on the outs and need something to change, or just because they're not in a good headspace, because they've lost a challenge and they're hungry and they haven't eaten in so long, then they're kind of their defenses are down, and that's when I can swoop in for the kill and maybe make something happen. So I don't know, looking back, which camp you would rather be in, but Xander's rationale makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and to tie this back into my previous mini rant here, I think this was a much more viable kind of line for people wanting to be back with the people who were not on the reward in the era where the person who won reward was handpicking who was going with them, and the people back at camp were the people who were at least quite conceivably salty about not having been picked, quite often by someone that they thought was like a close ally of theirs. And that, I think, is the main argument in favor of going back to one person picks two or three people to come with them on whatever the reward of the week is after an individual challenge. Whereas if we all just reached into a bag and drew rocks to form the teams, there is substantially less kind of strategic room to play. I feel like in that case, it is often at least one person, if not a couple people, who are back at camp, not on the reward, are kind of not only not receptive to wanting to mix up the game, they are in lockdown mode to make sure that no one is trying to mix up the game while the others are off on reward.
Yeah, I think that consistently that idea of some group of people, whether it's on the reward or it's explicitly the people who aren't on the reward, this is the chance to mix up and make something happen. That is consistently been just this weak point in prior Survivor seasons. And often it's in a situation where the battle lines are clear. We've had a few votes to kind of sort out where the game is going to go. And this is people just trying to realize their 5% chance of getting out of the dire situation that they're in. And so I don't think there's usually anything more compelling that you could replace it with, but it's always a sign of a season being in kind of a lull, that this becomes the focal plot point and the one chance in an episode of something turning around.
Yeah. So one other note, actually, on this reward challenge. First of all, we end up seeing, like, remarkably similar teams drawn to the ones that we had during the merge hourglass kind of team situation, which is pretty crazy. It's not crazy at all that Erica ended up drawing the bad rock yet again. There was a 1 in 11 chance that whoever drew the bad rock the first time was going to draw it again the second time. But the team breakdowns is a pretty wild kind of statistical anomaly there for sure. But it turned out that whichever team Evie ended up being on was going to have a pretty major advantage when it came to this challenge, because when we roll up to the final stage, which is shockingly a puzzle, not only is it predictable that it's going to be a puzzle, the puzzle itself, it turns out, is incredibly predictable. Evie puts this pyramid bead puzzle together in a matter of seconds, and the reason is Dominic, Evie memorized this exact puzzle ahead of time. This is the identical puzzle that was used on some challenge on Edge of Extinction, and it was essentially over as soon as Evie's team made it to the puzzle phase. I obviously am a big fan of doing this sort of thing and was thrilled to see it come in handy for anyone in another season, and particularly see it come in handy for Evie. That said, how hard is it to just come up with different puzzles? And I don't even mean get rid of slide puzzles or get rid of five-piece puzzles or bead pyramid puzzles. I mean, you can do extraordinarily similar puzzles to ones that you have done in previous seasons, but when it's the exact same configuration, well, it is very fun for me to see people rewarded for doing pretty obvious, in my view, kind of prep work for this season. It is baffling that the producers continue to open the door for this sort of thing, coming up on like 6 years after Spencer did this the first time.
With help from a certain, podcast host who may or may not be in this conversation right now. But yeah, it's another example of how, even though they're making this abrupt shift from acknowledging the show's history and leaning into that at every opportunity to pretending this is a fresh start, a blank slate that doesn't exist anymore, that fourth wall still has some cracks in it. Because, yeah, if you're going to reuse challenges from past seasons, you can convince the viewers that this is a fresh start and that not all of this is new again. But for the super fans out there like Evie, who applied for the show in the first place because they had watched the first 40 seasons and fallen in love with it, and when they learned they were going to appear on the show, intensively studied all of the challenges and so on from those first seasons because they knew that you had a habit of reusing them. And then, sure enough, you go back to that well, you reuse a challenge, and they're able to just instantly recognize it and pull the answer out of their brain. Well, like, yeah, you set yourself up for that. And in years past, they would have happily acknowledged this as, oh, yeah, if you put the work in, if you are a super fan of that caliber, then you're going to get rewarded in the context of Survivor. Now it just seems awkward because they're too cool for that. They're trying to move past that phase of their life, and yet Evie's here just reminding them of it at every turn.
Right, yeah, and I remember David Wright was another person who put in a ton of prep work on practicing the exact puzzles that they had used in the past, and somewhere along the way on that season, like, the identical kind of, like, 3D fire puzzle that they had used multiple times in the past came up once again. Even for me, I feel like this is an area that the show could at this point clean up, having seen what kind of effect it can have. And it, like, back when it was Spencer and the five-piece puzzle, I think that was a cool kind of way of breaking the game in an unforeseeable, at that point, manner as far as the producers were concerned, but now it seems like not only very easily avoidable, but also like borderline weird to me, if not explicitly weird to me. Like, do the producers want people to keep doing this? Because that's kind of the vibe that I got from Jeff when he was praising Evie after pulling this off, of like, that's what you get. If you pay close attention, you're going to be rewarded on Survivor. It seems odd, at the very least, that if this is the case, the producers would want to lean into this sort of thing.
Yeah, are we dropping the four or not? Because if we are, sure, fair enough. And if we're not, then we're just continuing in the vein of all of the seasons in the 30s. But at least pick a lane there and lean into it, because otherwise the messaging gets really confusing.
Right. Like, I'm very, let me be clear. I am very firmly in the camp of, as long as they keep doing this, it is vital. Not necessarily vital, but it can certainly pay huge dividends to be practicing the puzzles ahead of time. But I don't think I even want to live in a world anymore where it can have that kind of upside. But we will see what ends up becoming of all of this. So job well done, though, either way there, of course, by Evie. And I think, Dom, let's actually stay in the challenge zone here for a little while. Let's talk about this immunity challenge next, where before it even begins, because it appears the conditions are so extreme, Jeff welcomes everybody in and then says, before we get to today's challenge, we've got a negotiation to get to, where if anyone wants to sit out, I will give you one individual portion of rice to do so, or if multiple people are willing to sit out, I will give you enough rice for the whole team for 3 days. So let's start the bidding. And I think it seems like explicitly Shan kind of being the mouthpiece for the group here, where we right away get into a discussion about what does multiple mean. And Shan, I thought it was interesting. Honestly, like the word choice from Shan here, where she's not saying we'll do two or three people. She's saying I'll give you two or three people, and like I'll give you five. Like it's her decision to be made, and more on that a little bit later. But I thought that was at the very least potentially kind of telling there. But we end up seeing they try.
I think it really is, and if this becomes something that we should expect more and more is Jeff negotiating with the tribe, then usually that's not a democratic effort. It's not like they're all gathered around the log stump or whatever, and each of them is throwing ideas into the mix. I think more often, both for TV purposes and for how that naturally is going to play out, there's going to be a foreman or forewoman of the group, right? There's going to be someone who takes it upon themselves or is formally, informally pushed forward by the group to negotiate on their behalf. And I think the choice of who that person is can be very telling sometimes.
Is this Shangelina Keeley coming out here? Thank you.
yes.
So we go, all right, Jeff, I'll give you two or three. And Jeff says, I'll take seven. And eventually Shan goes up to five and they try to get the five. Ultimately, they are not able to get five, but once Shan and Nasir establish that at least the two of us are willing to do this, Xander swoops in. Swoops in and says, well, if someone else will do it with me, and Jeff, if you're willing to take four, then I will be the fourth. And finally, Ricard is willing to step up himself, and Dom, I agree. It seems like this is going to be a recurring thing in the new era of Survivor. I saw an article, which I did not read, but saw the headline about, like, this is something that we can expect more of, not just this season necessarily, or if there is even more of this later this season. But it sounds like this is something Jeff is actively into, is negotiating with the players here. And I want to call this shot right now. It seems on the surface like Jeff is the one who has all the leverage. There's no difference to him how many people sit out or don't sit out. He has nothing to lose. It's not his rice that he's giving up, and now he has to starve.
His life is fine.
Exactly. As we've heard him say, my life is fine. It seems like on the surface, it could come across to the players as like, well, we kind of have to meet Jeff's demands or else he's not going to give this to us. I actually think it could be kind of the opposite. I think if this is going to become a recurring thing, it is because Jeff really wants these sorts of deals to be interesting and get done. And while we saw him say, come on, 2 or 3, get out of here, I'll take 7. The subtext there, as far as I could tell, as soon as they started trying to scramble to get 7 people, he almost tried to like stop them and be like, no, this is a negotiation. I just said 7, but I'm obviously highballing you here. You can make a counteroffer. I really believe that as long as Jeff thinks you are at least close to the maximum that you will go to, he'll do it. And so like, to use this week as an illustration, I'm obviously not positive about any of this, but like, if Jeff really got the sense that not only was 7 not happening, obviously 5 is not happening, and if Xander steps up and says, if you'll take 4, I'll be the 4th, and no one else is willing to do it, I don't think it's crazy that Jeff would have said, I'll take 3. Just to make this deal go through and make for a more interesting TV moment here. So I am putting the official memo out to future Survivor players. Hardball Jeff, he will cave.
Yes, and not just because as viewers we want to root for the contestants themselves over Jeff, but yeah, I think being aware of the incentives that Jeff faces in that negotiation, like that's an essential part of any negotiation, right? Is working out what your negotiation partner wants to get out of the exchange and what they can afford to bargain with. In theory, Jeff has the best bargaining position you could possibly ask for, and yet it's not just him trying to make himself look tough. It's also him as an EP wanting to have this good TV moment for the episode, and if that involves him caving and giving in if the contestants are able to come to some sort of deal, then I don't think he wants to do that every time. And I think sometimes his judgment will be the best thing for TV, and maybe a little bit for my own ego too, will be if I just play hardball with them and walk away. But most of the time, I, as you say, I think he wants this to happen. He wants this to go through, and he wants you to work with him to make that happen, even if he's going to frame it in tough language or in this very adversarial way at times.
Right, and I by no means am trying to suggest that, like, I know conclusively that if Xander had been the only other person who was willing to step up, Jeff would have taken 3. It's totally possible that would not have been the case, but I think Jeff is just out there looking for whatever the maximum he can get is on any kind of like half reasonable number. And if he got the sense that everyone was truly terrified of giving up their spot in the immunity challenge, I think multiple, like when they're trying to define multiple, and he's kind of laughing off the idea of 2 or 3 people being within the spirit of what he's talking about, I think it's very within the realm of possibility that he would have changed his tune after seeing the reactions from people along the way. So yeah, I'm honestly like looking forward to seeing how the evolution of like negotiations goes, because I do think this is a potentially interesting kind of wrinkle to be adding in fairly regularly. And I'm at this point kind of optimistic about that. But I feel pretty strongly that the players are actually the ones with the leverage. So hopefully anyone hearing this who ends up on a future season of Survivor is able to get the upper hand there if they find themselves in these sorts of situations. Dom, we end up seeing Shan, Nasir, and Xander being the first 3 willing to step up to the plate here. coincidentally, or perhaps not coincidentally, these are the three people who have hidden immunity idols, and worst case scenario, can at least use them that night. Do you feel like that was the direct reason that they were willing to go for it?
Maybe, although it makes a lot more sense to me for like Shan, right, who seems to be in a bulletproof position, and then also on top of that has an immunity idol just in case, and then Nasir, who, for all we hear about, we need to take a shot at Nasir and maybe this is the time to do it while he's unaware. No one has actually followed through on that yet, with I guess the arguable exception of Heather, so props to her. But yeah, Nasir can, I think, justifiably take a week off if I don't think he's really feeling those hunger pangs himself. I think he just is being actually genuinely selfless about it, right? He wants the group to benefit, and that is Nasir, you know, that's just who he is. For Xander, it's a little more confusing because he very conceivably could have to use that idol tonight if he doesn't have immunity himself, and that's going to be the most puzzling outcome of the entire episode here, is that it seemed like Xander was not even, like, Xander didn't feel like he needed to use his idol, and no one else felt like they needed to make Xander feel like he had to use his idol either. So somehow Xander emerges unscathed. But if you already have a sense that that's what's going to happen, then sure, you can get away with it.
Yeah, I really don't know how Xander was once again able to sit on that idol, considering it appears, at least to me, like the Yasa group was under pretty heavy scrutiny here, and Evie is going to be the one who comes away with this individual immunity necklace. But maybe he just was on the dead right level, that like the big group wants this vote to definitely go through, and they know I have an idol. So TBD how much longer Xander is going to be able to keep sitting on that. But yeah, I don't think it was necessarily a complete coincidence that the three most willing people were those who at least have some sort of backup plan here. As for the challenge itself, we return to an old classic. A big week for Spencer Bledsoe here, between the puzzle being memorized ahead of time and now a challenge in which he set the all-time record. I think it was back in Kagayan. May have been in Second Chance. Honestly, not positive about this one, but it is the block on head Spencer Bledsoe O-face challenge, where this time around, I think Jeff said Spencer went like an hour and 22 minutes or somewhere in that neighborhood, and we have seen other iterations of this go for quite a while as well. This time around, it really seems like they have ramped up the difficulty and made this like a genuinely strenuous kind of physical exercise, where at least half the people are just out in the first minute, and I believe the final runtime is Evie wins this challenge in 4 minutes, which I certainly don't have the historical information in front of me here, but I think this is one of, if not the literal, shortest challenges in Survivor history.
Hmm. Yeah, I wonder if the scaling was off for this challenge, because we already don't have that many people taking part in the first place, and it seems like half of them at least are gone within a matter of seconds, right? If maybe minutes. So I wonder if when they are extending the height of the frame to meet the player's individual heights, if that calibration was just off in some way, to where like realistically a lot of people in the challenge were just not only not going to win, but not going to be able to make it past a few minutes. Whereas Evie, it seemed like, was at the time that they won, could quite happily have gone on for God knows how long and won it that way if they needed to.
I don't know if I would use the word happily. It didn't seem like...
Sure, I grit their teeth and bear it. But yeah, it seemed like that challenge, just the balancing was off somewhere in there. But yeah, either way, Evie quietly putting in maybe one of the most dominant challenge performances in a single episode, where recognizing and instantly being able to solve that puzzle in the reward challenge, and then one of the, I'm going to say, easiest immunity challenge victories of all time here. So a great episode for Evie, but unclear how much like actual effort was needed to require that.
Yes. Okay. So Evie going to be safe here. Tiffany and Xander now on the hot seat, with one of the former Yasa people now off the table for votes tonight, we get a lot of talk right away about the idea of just splitting the votes between the two of them. We also, incidentally, get a pretty reasonable amount of kind of Nasir discussion about maybe we should include him in this mix. He's got an idol. I don't know how many people are in the game feeling super great about Nasir being one of their tighter allies, and I don't know that they're not feeling great about him. I just haven't seen much of people talking about, oh, I really like and trust Nasir from a game perspective. I think everyone seems to be a big Nasir fan on a personal level, but just lack of screen time surrounding this issue left me concerned for sure about the prospect of this falling onto Nasir, especially Dominic, after he got the confessional about how he was like lock safe that night. That really jarred me, and I went into this tribal council not expecting to understand why it necessarily went this way, but thinking that Nasir would indeed be the person who was eliminated because he got that confessional, feeling totally safe. And historically speaking, that has not boded well for many people for whom that kind of thing makes air.
Yeah, with the setup of this vote going into tribal, it seemed like whoever was voted out, we were not going to get much of an explanation as to why that was. And so that, in theory, opened the door for some seemingly out-of-the-blue vote like Nasir, where maybe this all came together at the last minute, or, you know, it's they get a sense later that, oh, actually, Nasir was kidding about maybe wanting to use his idol, and this is the time to strike. So, yeah, I thought that maybe that could be getting set up here, but once again, that idea is floated and not acted upon, and I wonder if and when we do see them finally take a shot at Nasir, what is anything going to need to change for that to happen, or is it going to be as just seemingly random as this vote was?
I'm honestly not sure. Again, I feel like we've gotten to see very little, not only about Nasir, but about a lot of the relationships specifically pertaining to people on the original blue team. And any given week, I feel like I could show up to tribal council and it could be Nasir, or it could be Erica, or it could be Danny. And I'm not frankly expecting to have like a ton of clarity on why that truly became the case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I would say the big kind of storylines from how this vote ended up playing out for me, first of all, and this was something that like a curse almost that was lifted at, I think it was at the immunity challenge, maybe it was at the reward challenge, where Heather finally got some screen time, Dom, where she said something to Jeff and all of Twitter was like, oh, hey, Heather finally gets to talk. And then at this tribal council, just before we were about to go vote, Heather decides she's going to make it a live tribal council. And incidentally, I would definitely add Heather to that list of former blue team people where I don't expect to frankly have a clear idea of why she's leaving whenever it is that she's leaving, if it is sometime soon. But Heather, at long last, Dominic, putting herself on the map here, trying to instigate a live tribal council that ultimately seems like it may have done more harm than good for her. And I don't know how well received it necessarily was by the other people in the game, but at the very least, good to finally understand that Heather is a character on this TV show, I'm guessing, as far as like the average casual fan is concerned. I am strongly of the opinion that pretty close to a majority of people watching this episode live who just tune in on Wednesday nights and never think about it again until next Wednesday were surprised that Heather was a person within the game.
Oh, I think it's way more than that. I would say a overwhelming supermajority. And the only thing that makes me doubt that is when we had that incredibly saccharine challenge moment from a few weeks ago of Jeff cheering Heather on as she tried to fail her way through the challenge and then tried to sell that to the audience as one of the most inspirational things we've ever seen on Survivor. Maybe that would stick in the minds or stick in the craw of some amount of the audience. But beyond those exact people, I don't think anyone could have told you who Heather was or picked her out of a lineup. She really was, if not the most invisible contestant of all time, she was not on the season for most people. And I think that may honestly be true even after this episode, frankly.
So actually, quick update along those lines. This is something we talked about last week as well. And big time shout out to, it turns out, the source of this information, at Rob's Fact Checker, someone who I know has been deep in the Survivor data game for a long time. And I am very willing at this point to take calculations from that source as essentially gospel. And we talked last week about, by those metrics, Heather was, through the first seven episodes, the single most invisible character or player on any season of Survivor ever. And Dom, good news, buddy. After this week's breakout performance, through the first eight episodes, again via at Rob's Fact Checker here, Heather is now all the way down to number nine. She has made a ton of ground up here, so hoping at the very least that this can continue to some extent going forward, and Heather can finally be a player on the TV episodes as well. I would imagine that if we show up next week, the reception to Heather suddenly getting screen time would be much different in the eyes of the casual fan who probably have some memory of her at this point. But we will see what becomes of all of that. But Dom, if you would be willing, any guess as to who the first place contestant is now through the initial eight episodes of a Survivor season, now that Heather has been dethroned?
Oh, God. I'm going to cover myself here by saying the right answer is someone I have forgotten about and therefore cannot name, as is the point here. But,
I will.
I'm trying to think of people who were, like, completely invisible and then had a late spike. Give me Purple Kelly. In that vein,
Purple Kelly, I believe, I will double check this because I don't want to get this wrong now that we're spending a reasonable amount of time on this. I believe it is the case that Purple Kelly is number two, so not a bad guess. But Dom, yeah, Kelly Shin, number two. Number one, however, a name that made me laugh when I saw it, just based on our real-time commentary of that season, the most invisible person through the first eight episodes of any season of Survivor ever. How about your girl, Dom, Brenda Lowe? That's right.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I remember when we were covering Karamoan in real time, one of my takes entering the season was, I get why people like Brenda Lowe based on Nicaragua, but for my money, if you really are paying attention to what she's saying over the course of that season, Brenda Lowe is like a complete imposter of a Survivor player. And then we show up to Karamoan, and as we were covering that in the moment, we had a weekly running tally as I was rubbing it in Dom's face that Brenda was like totally invisible, of like the amount of time that had passed between Brenda's last confessional and whenever her next one would be. And I certainly have not looked this up or anything, but I think it was something in the neighborhood of like 360 minutes of commercial-free episode time between Brenda confessionals, which is just like staggering. And so I'm guessing this is right around that point where Brenda was just not on the show for months at a time.
And look, as a Brenda, you know, semi-ironic to sincere Brenda supporter for most of that season, after her final tribal council embarrassment antics, I'm going to say that was, you know, too much time for Brenda Lowe. We could have scaled that back a little bit more, and that would have been a fair fate for her.
Yes. Okay. So Heather, all the way down now to number nine. We will track this story as it continues here. But the other big thing that I wanted to get to, not just from Tribal Council, because we certainly saw some of this in the lead up to everyone going to vote, but even more of it at Tribal Council once we had that live tribal, and it seemed like Shan was very much the one running point, It appears that Deshaun, in particular, is not loving that kind of dynamic where he feels like Shan is not really listening to much of what he and potentially other people are saying. And she's like giving them the courtesy of giving them a minute to talk and get their opinions out into the universe, but not actually absorbing them. A couple of times over the course of this week, we ended up seeing that pretty explicitly laid out by Deshaun, is not loving that that was the way things seem to be playing out. We see a clip of him pulling Shan aside at camp and saying, I think we need to work on communicating better because I don't do well with people just telling me what to do. And it seems like you're not really listening to me. And furthermore, the next time on Survivor preview was pretty much exclusively that as well, of Deshaun has kind of had it up to here with Shan. What are you making of this? Because obviously Shan has been a focal point of this season overall. Are you getting nervous that she may be on her way to a downfall sometime soon?
I think that may be happening, but I'm not nervous about it. I'm excited about it. And not because I'm one of these people who like rabidly hate Shan after this episode. And I've seen some people sincerely saying that Shan is like their least favorite Survivor contestant of all time, which if that's the case, then you really are dropping the four and keeping the one, because there have been some true pieces of shit on the show in the past. But I'm excited because I think it's great when you have these power players who are more than just that, who aren't just robotically running the numbers and, you know, implementing the results and doing that very methodically. It's great when they're messy and it feels like they could have this downfall at any time and they might fall prey to their own, you know, worst impulses or whatever. And that's great. And we have some true personal drama, not just in general on the show, but between alliance members and tight alliance members too. Like Ricard and Shan, you saw Shan say, like, Ricard is my number one, and that's still true, but I'm wondering how sustainable that really is in the long term. And now too, with like Shan and Deshaun, again, the two of them notionally are in this core four alliance, which is really tight and could be that foursome that ends up running the game if they're able to keep that up and not have this feud just devour their alliance from the inside. So I love all of that. That's what makes Survivor so fun to watch, even when the boot order itself is nothing to write home about. So I think all of that is fantastic. I did see people. So I think one reason why some people are turning on Shan now is so she had this quote about being a pastor, and as a pastor she has to listen to what all of her congregants have to say and then trick them into doing whatever she wants them to do anyway. And it struck me firstly that this is just what a lot of Survivor confessionals are like nowadays. It's, you know, my job is X, and as an X, I have to trick people into doing what I want them to do. And in that sense, it's really not different from any kind of leadership role or corporate role or anything like that, sales job, whatever it is. And even with, so I see why Shan being specifically a pastor, that would rub people the wrong way, even though it never seemed to rub people the wrong way with, like, friend of the show Verna Jubert, for example, who was talking in very similar terms about, hey, I'm a pastor, and that's the perfect job to train you to train yourself to manipulate people on Survivor. But also, like, we've had Cops Are Us, right, where being good at that as a cop is far more concerning, I suppose, in the real world than being good at that as a pastor. And if you want to have a conversation about authority figures in the context of organized religion and why they might be worthy of suspicion in general, then I'm on board. We can have that conversation. But focusing all of that on Shan specifically, I don't know where that's coming from. And I guess if you object to Shan because of just her starting pointless drama on Twitter, then okay, sure. But like, in that case, Shan's worst offense is joining the ranks of people who are not worthy of indictment in their own right, but could be well served by logging off from time to time. And that's more of us than any of us would care to admit.
So I don't generally follow people on the currently airing season on Twitter because I'm just so terrified about anything like spoiler adjacent. So I don't actually even know what you're talking about as far as Chan stirring up drama. Although I will say, Evie, I decided to follow this week. So note that for your scorecard. I felt safe with Evie. But yeah, that confessional about, like, I'm a pastor and it's about convincing people to do what I think is best anyway. Just before that, as this is all coming to light during the camp portion between Shan and Deshaun, she gets a kind of extended confessional that concludes in that pastor thing, but I thought had a potentially really interesting kind of cut made in it where she says, like, my game is social, and then they cut away and show a bunch of, like, random chatter around camp and her talking to other people, and she says, all the while making people feel heard and feel like their opinions matter. And then there's, like, a sharp cut away at that point, and she's, like, raising her arms a little bit as they cut away, and I'm obviously not positive about this, but I seriously feel like they cut out her saying, essentially, which they don't, other people's opinions don't really matter to me at this point, and then kind of ties it back into that idea with the pastor thing. But I feel like they cut out her saying, like, people can tell me whatever they want, I am going to pretend to listen, but I'm not going to do that. And I really am getting the sense that, like, that just kind of is the case, and we as an audience are probably better off believing the people who say, like, I just don't feel like Shan is giving me the time of day. And it seems like she's doing a good job with Liana at the very least along those lines, but I don't think it's a huge coincidence that Ricard in the early days and now Deshaun at this point, both of whom it seemed like were dying to work with Shan above pretty much anyone else in the game, are finding themselves just, like, unable to really commit to that because it truly seems like she does not actually care that much about what they think.
Yeah, and another point here is, as friend of the show, John Cochran, pointed out on Twitter recently, is that increasingly nowadays, everything gets filtered through the prism of this is who I am in real life, or this is my one defining character trait, and that's what informs everything I do within the game. And that is explicitly encouraged by the questions that you are asked in confessional. So it's not just, especially if your job is one that could be tied into that. So you're not going to be told to say, well, as a advertising account manager, my job is to sell to people, and I'm going to sell to Deshaun that he needs to X, Y, and Z. However, if you are, I mean, God forbid another professional poker player ends up on Survivor, we're never going to hear the end of it. but even just more normal jobs in that space, I think, like certainly with the cops, they always make a big deal out of that. But with Shan as a pastor, I don't think she needs any encouragement to, you know, especially with her evil song, where whenever she's done anything evil, she sings to herself, and so on and so forth. But I think she will be encouraged by whoever's asking her questions to frame it in that way. And so I don't think that if you were to meet Shan in real life, every single anecdote she tells you or every point that she makes, she starts with the words, oh, well, as a pastor. But that's for Shan as a Survivor character. That's what they want from her. And that's kind of what she wants from herself as a Survivor character. And she knows that that's what they want too. And so, of course, that's going to be a much bigger part of the eventual experience than it has any right to be.
Right. And I definitely remember back when we were in the heart of the, like, blank versus blank versus blank seasons, people would go out of their way to frame, Zeke is the one who really comes to mind, talking about, like, well, as a millennial and, like, doing so very deliberately, or, like, David Wright would do similar things where, like, the contestants are just aware that this is what the producers want, even if the producers are not explicitly asking them to frame it in those terms. This is just like what the show wants to do, is illustrate how people's real lives tie into what they're doing on Survivor. And hopefully by the end of the season, they can really illustrate how Survivor will now tie into their real life going forward, and what a world-altering experience this has been for them. And the more you can give them along either of those lines, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So Dom, unfortunately, as far as I'm concerned, and shockingly, again, as far as I was concerned, we're going to lose Tiffany here this week. Now, knowing the result here and not having a ton of information with which to work, I'm kind of chalking this up to everyone's still kind of on board to get rid of the Yellow Tribe, and people were just nervous about Xander having an idol. Do you feel like there was much more that went into this Tiffany elimination?
So I think Tiffany, her name was always going to be in the mix, given that initial setup. The big question, of course, is why wasn't Xander's, right? Because when you know he has a face-off immunity idol, surely the natural impulse is, all right, we're going to split it. We're going to make sure that a majority of votes go on Xander so that either he has to use it, or if he doesn't use it, we now get the choice of whether to knock him out or not. And I could buy if Xander is an important puzzle piece for someone in the big alliance, if actually, if that did happen, they might still vote out Tiffany instead for some reason, which wouldn't be clear to us at the time. But the fact that he wasn't even in that initial split in a clean way, that is the puzzling thing about all of that.
I totally agree. And I still don't feel like I have much of a reason to believe that Xander is low-key some integral piece for anyone within the big alliance. I think they probably like him and, under the right circumstances, would be willing to work with him going forward. But I don't imagine it's the case that pretty much anyone in that mix is like desperately trying to save Xander. So I had very similar questions about why we would go for Tiffany instead of Xander, even knowing that Xander could very conceivably play an idol. Let's at least split and make him do that. And either way, we've either gotten rid of Xander with an idol in his pocket, or he has at least now burned his idol, and we don't have to worry about that next time. And it sounds like Tiffany had a lot of questions along those lines as well in her exit press of like, I can't believe that it just wound up on me in this fashion instead of any idols being put to the test here. And I think that is a pretty fair question.
Yeah, so with Sydney last week and Tiffany now this week, both of them have the sense of like, how the hell did this happen? Why me? Like, it doesn't make any sense. And I think both of them are quite entitled to feel that way, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. And we will see what becomes of all of these idols, but it is pretty wild that they first and foremost took so long to be active within the game, and we still haven't seen a single idol play all season. I am guessing some are coming down the line, but I'm finding that a pretty refreshing kind of change of pace there. And yeah, I furthermore want to say, I not only was surprised by it being Tiffany in kind of a clean way here this vote, I really liked Tiffany and was very sad to see her go. I thought she had a ton of potential as a person who was, first of all, an obviously very fun character, whether you like her or not. And I think most people generally did like Tiffany on the show. Clearly out there, playing hard, wanted to win. We got a great confessional from her about, like, I'll make an alliance with the crew. I'll make an alliance with any crab who wants to vote with me. I just want to stick around. Love to see that kind of just energy and enthusiasm from Tiffany. So both shocked and heartbroken to see her end up leaving this soon. But yeah.
Sad to see her go. Love that the spoiler community apparently in shambles now, because she was either the spoiled winner or one of the spoiled late game finalists or something. And so love to see that rebound back on them. And apparently among the Edricas. She was a one of the topics as well. Although I'm going to say those people probably also are part of the spoiler community too, because based on Tiffany's early edit, there was no way she was going to be a potential winner of the season, at least in my eyes.
So, yeah, I saw. I obviously have avoided all of this like the absolute plague and do not want to know any of the spoilers ever, even if they do end up proving to be wrong there. But I heard that apparently some sort of spoilers finally exist on this season, and similarly saw a lot more support for Tiffany coming out. So on that front, I actually was kind of excited to see her leave, to just invalidate the concerns I had about just combining the fact of I have heard that spoilers are apparently out there now, and I'm suddenly seeing Tiffany like skyrocket in people's estimation, ecstatic that I don't have to wonder in the back of my mind anymore about that. But
you hate to see her go, but you love to watch her leave, is what you're saying?
Absolutely, here. Yes. So there goes Tiffany, someone I would certainly be down to see come back and play Survivor again if she were so inclined there. Dominic, anything else from the episode proper before we dive into the edit zone?
What did you make of Deshaun across this episode in general? Because we saw a bit of that feud with Shan, which it seems like may reach even loftier heights next week. But then jumping back to the very beginning, we see the Yassas and especially Evie as part of the relationship repair tour try to extend that olive branch to Deshaun, and he isn't really clamping down on it. And he justifies this by saying that, look, after voting me at Tribal last night, all of the Yassas now want to work with me, and no, I'm not interested in working with any of you. But it's like, it's not about you. And this is something that we see so often, right? Whereas someone receives votes who's in the majority, and they take it as this, not only this deep personal insult, but also a sign that those people are gunning for me now and evermore, and if I don't get them, then they're gonna get me, and only one of us can live while the other survives. And it's just not really like that, especially at a tribal where not only do they have to vote for somebody, and of course it was going to be somebody in your group, so you know, we'll take suggestions as to who they should have voted for instead, but also they could only vote for like one of four or five different people, not including themselves. And so at that point, literally, who are they meant to vote for? Like, to give me a name, I'll take any name.
It was, I think, literally, like, they essentially had to just choose between him and Danny. And yeah, that actually might have been the first thing all season that, well, I totally understood where Deshaun was coming from in terms of he just watched these people put all of their votes on him the previous night. And you are totally right, Dom, that there are many contextual elements that makes that, for my money, far less of an egregious offense or attack on Deshaun than it seems like he kind of received it as. And that confessional about, like, they all want to work with me. No, I thought it was funny, but also, like, pretty explicitly, like, the wrong idea, which is the first major concern that I've had about Deshaun this season. I feel like that is a spot where what would Ceri do? Probably be a lot more willing to forgive and not forget, but make sure that those bridges are not just burned forever, especially in a game in this new era where pretty much anything can happen. And there are going to be many timelines where you could find votes from Xander, Evie, and Tiffany quite useful down the line, as long as you put on a happy face for them and tell them that it's all good. On the other hand, though, I really did like out of Deshaun this week wanting to be straightforward with Shan and say, like, I really want to work with you, but, like, we need to discuss how this relationship is going to go for us, because as things are currently playing out, this is not satisfying what I need out of an alliance. I want this to be a genuine partnership, and I'm still super down if that can indeed be the case, but this needs to be more of a back and forth rather than you just kind of telling me what to do. And I think that impulse is a very good and healthy one, not just on Survivor, but in any kind of relationship or interpersonal dynamic there, of wanting to be straightforward with Shan about this is something that could very easily be repaired, but it's not going to happen if you don't know about the concerns that I have and we can't talk about how to get back on the right page. So a very good overall week for me as far as Deshaun is concerned. I think he continues to kind of be a, for the most part, believable and rational kind of voice within the game that the audience is probably meant to generally like and agree with. And I'm willing to look past him the morning after getting a bunch of votes in a super dramatic tribal council, perhaps being a little quick to close the book on the remaining people from that Yasa 3. But I actually, to return to that idea of him kind of shutting down the idea of working with the Yasas in the future, we pretty shortly after that got a confessional from Liana, and we talked a little bit earlier about Liana, shockingly it seems, kind of being back into the idea of at least considering working with Xander in the future. We're right after we've heard Deshaun say, like, I'm not interested in working with any of these Yasa people. We then hear Liana say, Xander's someone I've wanted out since the very beginning, but now he's someone I'm strongly considering working with. And I'm thinking the best Survivor players have had to do that. And she's right, that willingness to leave those sorts of doors open has paid many, many dividends for a lot of players who are historically strong players, for my money, over the years. And that is, as far as Deshaun is concerned, pretty much the first thing this season that has made me nervous about him. Or nervous for him, rather.
Yes. Yeah, I would co-sign all of that.
Okay. So, Dom, I believe that's going to do it before we dive into the edit zone. He is, of course, on Twitter, at DomHRV. I am on Twitter, at Colin Stone. Now going to take a closer look at some of the editing nuances, which I know is not necessarily everyone's cup of tea, so this would be the point to check out if that is not your thing. But I think without further ado, Dom, let's hit the edit zone. You are listening to the
Dom and Colin Edit Zone.
Mike Holloway,
Michelle Ken,
Brad Culpepper, Rob and Sandra.
You are listening to the
Dom and Colin
Edit Zone.
What are you doing?
Tune out now.
All right, Dom, into the edit zone, and obviously I would say the big question of the week here is the Shan coronation falling apart, or is this just the doubt that they are very fond of trying to convince the audience of having, often right around the merge time?
I will say, when Tony is our most recent winner of Survivor, looking back to his first winning game, where he was by far the biggest character at most points in the season, but then also we wrote him off around exactly this time, because how could someone who was this batshit insane go on to win a season of Survivor? And then he does, and looking back, it's tough to see how it could have been any other way. Is it weird to say that the past week or two has almost made me more confident in Shan, if anything?
That is an interesting comparison there, and a similar one came to mind for me, where I vividly remember we spent the entire pre-merge of Millennials versus Gen X essentially framing it in terms of, it is either Adam or Ken, and there are no other viable winner candidates. And then we showed up to the merge, and I still maintain that this is the case, that Adam Klein at the merge and at the following episode where Taylor got eliminated, those are the two worst episodes that any eventual winner has ever had. And I was wondering if we were kind of in that zone now with Shan.
Mm-hmm.
So I am, on one hand, more open to the possibility that there are an increasing number of timelines where this could conceivably fall apart for Shan. But at the same time, because of the timing of all of this, a part of me does want to go even higher on Shan's winning chances, that this is the classic kind of doubt that they want to force us to have.
yeah, I guess this does run into the theory that we were proposing a few weeks ago of, on this season in particular, they want the winner's edit and storyline to be completely ironclad and immune from any kind of criticism. And that sure is not the case after the last few weeks if that winner is Shan. But if she is able to rebound from this, then as people looking at the edit, it's easy to interpret that as, well, we have to introduce doubt somewhere. And if the logic of the game itself is that, that if there's no resistance to the Shan coronation there, then we're going to have to find it in some of these day-to-day interactions with other players. And then also, I think that for viewers, maybe they come away with a less positive view of Shan over the past few weeks. And again, some people are like writing her off as their least favorite Survivor player of all time. So maybe those people are lost causes now. But for the rest, you know, I think it's maybe fine if they end up with a more complicated set of feelings about Shan, but, you know, with the certainty that she will go on to win and be a deserving winner by the standards that the show likes to set up for itself now.
And I would definitely like to add, there is a lot of time left. I think slightly less time left than there generally is at this point in the game as far as like episode count is concerned, but I have forever been a big believer in the idea that the producers could, or the editors rather, could essentially keep someone like borderline invisible for the duration of a season, and over the course of a 2-2.5 hour-ish finale, make the vast majority of the casual audience be rooting for that person when Final Tribal Council rolls along, even if they didn't know who that person was at the beginning of the finale. And so from that perspective, I feel like a Shan rebound is still very much on the table, if not the overwhelmingly likely situation on the table, where, yeah, at this point, the casual audience obviously knows who Shan is and have seen her play a influential and impressive game throughout like the duration of the pre-merge. They may have some skepticism or questions about her now, but the overwhelming majority of people who are watching this show are going to have zero memory of this point in the game if they start making Shan look good again anytime, even in the next like 3 or 4 weeks, frankly. Like, I think this is extremely easy for the casual fans' perceptions to recover from. Like, we could easily enter the finale with no concerns whatsoever about anything Shan was doing at this point in the game, because we don't remember, because we're casuals.
Yeah.
So still heavy, heavy front runner as far as I'm concerned, although would love to come in here one of these weeks and have some more legitimate reasons to be higher on certain others. If we do want to look at some of the other candidates here, Deshaun, as mentioned, continues to really just impress me as a player, although, again, for the first time pretty much all season, a couple of concerns along those lines, but I think you're on roughly that same page as well, and I continue to be interested in seeing what Deshaun is going to bring to this season, because I still feel good about him being around for a little while. Dom, one of the big edit stories this week for me is as things pertain to Evie, who has obviously had a big couple of weeks here, just kind of in the spotlight game wise. I was very, very impressed. So impressed, in fact, that I followed Evie on Twitter, which is a big deal for me following an active contestant as the season is currently airing. So congratulations to Evie on that one, earning a highly coveted Colin Stone follow. But what are you thinking about Evie's big come up over these last couple of weeks?
It seemed to me like when we were trying to narrow the field down in the early stages of the season, it was either at the merge, we're going to be saying it's either Evie by a long way or Shan by a long way, right? Unless my memory is failing me here. And Evie never really had an especially quiet week. And now that we're at the merge, Evie has taken on this whole new underdog story. which remains to be seen how long that can continue for or where it's going to go from here. But leaving aside the fact that she's a massive target in the minority of the group, putting that to one side for now, just looking at the quality of the edit, it seems like, if anything, Evie's edit has been more consistently strong across the board than Chan's has been with the last few weeks in mind.
No question, as far as I would be concerned there. And yeah, Evie was obviously a big-time standout during the early weeks and then started to kind of fade down a bit just as the green team was going to every single tribal council. There was just significantly less time for Evie to shine on the TV episodes. I am holding out hope that this can continue to be like a long-term story for Evie here, and I'm far more reluctant to commit to that after seeing Tiffany get voted out this past week, because I really thought that all three of Tiffany, Xander, and Evie were at least going to make it through a week or two as some random people from the original blue team or whatever started getting voted out. Maybe Ricard got voted out or something like that. I really had it in my mind that all of them were going to get longer term stories than we saw at least Tiffany end up getting here. And that's making me kind of gun shy on even necessarily feeling like Evie is a lock to make it past this next episode, or Xander, for similar reasons there. But I'm still feeling like Evie is a high likelihood candidate to be the big underdog of the season and continue to make a deep run, if not come very close, potentially, like maybe a fire challenge or something away from becoming the eventual winner. It's very difficult for me at this point to put anyone even close to in the same tier that Shan is in from the eventual winner perspective, but I think Evie would probably be my number two, and I think there are plenty of conceivable timelines where one of Xander or Evie leaves pretty soon, and the other one is able to get some kind of footing as the big alliance starts getting greedier and is more and more willing to turn on each other. And I think it is probably more likely that it is Xander who leaves soon and Evie is able to work their way in there. So hoping for that, thinking it is very much on the table, but at the same time, wouldn't be shocked if Evie's gone next week, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One other thing as far as the edit stuff for me goes this week is the whole papaya situation, as far as I'm concerned, seems like it very easily could have and almost surely would have just been left on the cutting room floor were it not being very deliberately used to like set up more about this Shan and Ricard dynamic that we saw plenty of during their run on the original green team, where even as the last two people on that tribe, it was very difficult for me to feel like they were even feeling great about, even feeling good rather, about each other entering this merge. So I am just perpetually going to be on Shan versus Ricard watch, and I do not frankly see that one going Ricard's way too often here, but I feel like the papaya scene is another piece of pretty overwhelming evidence that there's going to be some kind of big fallout between these two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right. And then the only other thing that I guess I have here on the edit, just because I feel like I'm running out of people I can even talk myself into drawing live to win this season, I think we're pretty squarely looking at Shan, Evie, willing to extend some sort of equity to Xander and Deshaun as well, and maybe Liana, but that would pretty much blow me away at this point. The only other person that I had had my eye on during the early portion and am unfortunately now, I think, just kind of running out of ways to convince myself that it may ultimately come in, unless he has a huge next couple of episodes here, in which case the watch is back on Nasir. I love as a character and am rooting very hard for, and it seems like he's in a really interesting position within the game, but I just don't feel like we're seeing quite enough of him to really talk myself into him being a viable winner here.
We really don't see much from him at all, and I think when we do, it's through the lens of, oh, well, this is a really fun character, and we love Nasir, and isn't he just such a nice guy, right? Which certainly can be the foundation of a winner's edit, but I feel like in Modern Survivor, that's often, he's a great guy, and also he's great at playing the game, and that second element just hasn't clicked into place yet.
Right, yeah. So we'll see what becomes of Nasir. I'm open to the possibility that if he can have a big next couple of weeks, I can have him back in the mix here. The final edit note, I suppose, for me is losing Tiffany has made me a lot more nervous about this zero vote finalist bet that I referenced a couple of weeks ago that I made with AJ Van Gilder many, many, many months ago, not knowing anything about how this season was structured or who was in the cast or anything like that. I gave AJ 6-1. I bet $60 to win $10, because I'm an idiot, that there would be a zero vote finalist on this season, assuming it is a final three. And Tiffany leaving has made me a lot more nervous about my side of that bet. And I think at this point, is my best bet Liana or Heather or Danny, or what am I hoping for as far as a zero vote finalist goes? Are you, anyone jumping out to you along those lines?
I honestly could see it being Danny, as weird as that sounds.
I'm having to do some serious mental gymnastics to get there, but I'm highly inclined to just see whatever I want to see. So yeah, Danny somehow making it to the finals is not a timeline I had really considered, frankly, up until this point, but I think he could at least bail me out there. Maybe Erica could kind of sneak her way through.
Yeah, I think Erica's a good call there too, for sure.
Okay, so continuing to track that, and we will see how that goes, because at this hour, a lot of my eggs, I think, had been in the Tiffany basket there, and now I'm getting nervous. But Dom, I believe I am fresh out of edit zone thoughts / theories this week. Anything else that you wanted to get to?
No, I'm good.
All right. I believe that is finally going to wrap it up for us here. Thank you guys, of course, who have made it this far. One more time, he's on Twitter @DomHRV. I am @ColinStone. We will talk to you soon. Take care, everybody.